stand by. Welcome and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, Solving Mainframe Systems Management Challenges in an SOA World Using OmegaMod. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. The speaker for today's teleconference is Ed Woods, Consulting IT Specialist with IBM. At this time, I'd like to hand it over to our speaker, Ed Woods.
Thank you. My name again is Ed Woods with IBM Corporation, and we're here today to talk about solving mainframe systems management challenges in an SOA world using OmegaMod. SOA, or service-oriented architecture, is one of those buzz phrases or buzzwords that's been around for a few years now, and we are seeing a trend in many shops to start designing, building, and deploying build around this concept of SOA. So what this presentation is about is we'll do a little bit of discussion on what SOA is just as a level set, but really the focus is going to be more on the notion of how to design, build, craft, and conceive an effective monitoring and systems management strategy for business applications built and designed and conceived around this concept of SOA, with a focus primarily, of course, on ZOS as part of this overall picture. So this is what we're going to be looking at here. This is the target, if you will, designing and building an effective monitoring strategy. So let's go to the agenda slide, which is the second slide. So we'll talk a little bit about building a little bit better understanding of what SOA means. Set some conceptual ground, if you will. Then we'll talk about some of the common performance and availability management challenges that SOA introduces. It is a different paradigm, if you will, for creating and conceiving applications. So as a result, there will be some different considerations when we're talking about the performance management, availability management, et cetera, of SOA. Then we'll talk about how to design a performance and availability management strategy. What do I need to do? How do I need to design it? How do I need to pull things together? What kind of information do I need to look at, as well as how it all ties together? What is the integration of all this information? We'll talk about the sources of the information, and then we'll just look at some examples, for example, of information you can get, alerts, historical, real-time, etc. So that's our basic agenda. Let's go to the next slide. We'll start with the definition. Service-oriented architecture, SOA defined. If you go out on the web, you go to wiki pages, Google, you name it, there's a wide variety of different definitions of what service-oriented architecture is about. Pick one that you think is most relevant. It's very much, I wouldn't say an eye of the beholder thing, but there is a lot of different variances in what it means. But ultimately, I think this is the definition that I find the most useful, which is basically service-oriented architecture is an architectural style for creating and using business processes. A style meaning, in a way, it's not so much a technology-based notion as it is more a conceptual or a design-based notion, because there's a variety of ways from a technical perspective you can implement SOA, but it's more, in a way, the value add of SOA is the consolidation, I think, of the business processes. So service-oriented architecture, the definition continues, is a set of patterns for building distributed systems. And so basically what that means is really, it's more relevant to how these applications and components and services interact and optimizing these interactions. Ultimately, again, that's the value add of the process. So let's go to the next slide that says common characteristics of SOA applications. Well, SOA is based on a loosely coupled paradigm. Basically, what we're trying to do is get out of the notion of the hardwired kind of logic that has characterized legacy systems for many years and get rid of these hardwired interdependencies, if you will, between systems. So there is an abstraction, if you will, relative to the layers of the application, relative to where maybe data or other components may be coming from. So in SOA, the interface is designed in more of a neutral manner, neutral hardware, neutral operating system, neutral program language, neutral whatever, et cetera, so that you achieve this level of abstraction by not necessarily having these hardwired critical dependencies underneath. SOA can be beneficial because it will reuse existing technology infrastructure. So in this example, since we're talking about a Megamon and we're going to be talking as well about ZOS and how ZOS ties into this SOA paradigm, what it means then is that, you know, the mainframe can be a very important, relevant part of this SOA deployment. You can have applications and components and programs that were written decades ago that can still, given the capabilities of IMS, CICS, DB2, et cetera, plug and play in this type of an environment. Another common characteristic of SOA is it is built around industry standards. These industry standards consist of buzzwords you may or may not have heard of before, XML, SOAP, JDBC, message-oriented middleware, things like MQ, et cetera. So by using industry standards, you then have a way to integrate and tie these components together in a consistent way and achieve this level of abstraction that I mentioned earlier in this slide. So let's go to the next slide that says System-Z and systems-oriented architecture. One of the key strengths of the mainframe in ZOS is transaction processing. Transaction processing as well as being able to serve up large quantities of data, etc. When you look at things from an SOA perspective, many of the services that compose SOA-type applications are business transaction-oriented in a lot of ways. So the mainframe fits well into this paradigm because the mainframe has the ability to process a large amount of data processed simultaneously. It's a flexible platform and has the ability to service transactions very effectively and efficiently. Along those same lines, System-Z provides many advantages because of its high scalability, availability, reliability, security, etc. System-Z plugs and plays well in that kind of a paradigm. Continuing on down this line then, IMS and CICS work in this paradigm as well because IMS and CICS are good transaction managers and can cooperate and plug and play nicely in this service-oriented environment. IMS and CICS support high volume, high reliability transactional workloads. And then, of course, from a DB2 perspective, DB2 handles SQL in high volumes very effectively. DB2 has support for such things as XML. So as a result, each of these components along the way has the ability to plug and play well within the service-oriented architecture paradigms. So we're going to go to the next slide that says web services invocation model. Well, web services is a lot of what this is all built around. And by following this model, you basically can break applications down into these core components. So you'll have a service requester, a service provider, and a service registry that kind of keeps track of everything. So you'll have a discovery component that basically will discover the service and then retrieve it. You'll have what's called the WSDL, if you will, the WSDL, that is used to describe the function that makes up the service. And then there's messaging that it will invoke the web service to basically have the application, in essence, get invoked and pull the data back as required. So this web services model, this invocation model, is a lot of what this whole premise is built around. So let's go to the next slide that says web services useful definitions. So WSDL or WSDL is what's used to describe the functions that basically say what the application is about, documenting how it's called, what its information is, what its parameters, input, output, et cetera, are about. And this WSDL is built around something such as XML. So XML is used to carry the values of the parameters and the outputs of the function. And SOAP can be used as the messaging protocol that carries the content, the XML data, over the network. Typically, that network transport is going to be something such as HTTP. So if we go to the next slide, another term that we'll want to introduce is something called the Enterprise Service Bus, or the ESB. The Enterprise Service Bus is basically a set of patterns, again. What it's about is, again, trying to achieve another level of abstraction, if you will, to eliminate the hardwired aspect that many applications may have, to eliminate these RPC-like remote procedure call, synchronous type of methodologies that applications may have used before, and and basically achieve another level of abstraction and simplification and streamlining by having everything go through a common bus approach, if you will. So you'll often see references to such things as ESB when we're talking about SOA. Let's go to the next slide that says common needs and challenges of SOA. Well, first of all, there's benefit to deploying applications using SOA because these businesses need a couple, three key things. First and foremost is a way to be able to optimize and change business processes quickly and efficiently. Businesses need to be more agile and be able to deploy their technology, automated processes, et cetera, more quickly and efficiently. However, currently, businesses encounter many challenges when trying to do this. Their software processes that are currently in place may not be well documented. Key performance indicators may not be clearly defined, so it's hard to define what is good service level to the customer or the user. The legacy applications may have all sorts of complex interconnections, et cetera, so as a result, it's hard to understand what is the interrelationship of these applications. The legacy applications may have complex requirements just from a change control, coding perspective, whatever, as well as the existing applications may have limited visibility and understanding just from a performance standpoint. So as a result, there are many benefits to going to SOA, but there are challenges getting there as well. So let's go to the next slide that says the value add of the SOA approach. Fundamentally, when you boil it down, the value add of the SOA approach is the consolidation of business processes, the elimination of redundancy, consolidation, streamlining, standardizing on interfaces, consistency, and then the optimization and benefit from there. So I just drew up in this chart a simple example which shows here we have several different applications, an application A, an app B, an app C, an app D. And each of these applications may have an entry, inquiry, update type functions. And each of these might be different discrete functions coded differently, different code bases, different components, et cetera, each called in their own particular ways based upon the requirements of the specific application. That's what you have on the left. If you look at the right-hand side, and again, this is a simple example, but this hopefully does show what we're trying to get to here, which is basically if you can condense that down so that you can have basically an entry, inquiry, update type process that may be used as a service by any one of several different applications. You've simplified your infrastructure, you've optimized that infrastructure, you've consolidated things down, and basically made your applications more agile in many ways in terms of your ability to make them more flexible, changeable, et cetera. This notion of understanding the business perspective, I think, is really central to the value add of SOA. You can talk all sorts of other technology. We can talk about XML and web services and HTTP and ESBs and all these other things. But ultimately, I think when you boil it down, the true value add of SOA is, are you able to understand the business processes and then condense those down so that you get this type of optimization? And when you get this type of optimization, that's where you start seeing benefit from a service-oriented architecture type of approach. If you're not able to understand the business processes at this level, then perhaps you may even run the danger of really just introducing an additional technology layer to the process, and you may not get the bang for the buck as a result. So therein lies the challenge. Now, this notion as well, then, also drives how you may conceive and design and consider your monitoring strategy. So not only from a design standpoint do you need to understand the business processes, but also from a monitoring standpoint, it's important to understand those business processes. The one folds into the other. If I do an effective job of analyzing, aggregating, condensing, coalescing, and optimizing my business processes on the initial design phase, I can monitor and manage that as well using that same notion, if you will, of understanding from a business application perspective. So let's go to the next slide. This says common performance and availability management challenges of SOA. Well, the first thing is, of course, the loosely coupled nature of SOA itself poses some unique performance and availability management challenges. How do you measure, monitor, and manage something that is something in a way of a moving target? It's not hardwired. It may be called by any one of a variety of different means. It's something that may be accessed in different ways. So how do you get your arms around what is the performance? What is the actual service that's being delivered to the user? So you have many questions that you probably need to consider when you're building a performance and availability management strategy for SOA. First and foremost, of course, is what to monitor and how to monitor it. What are the key things you need to monitor and collect information on? How do you then in turn monitor and analyze the interactions of the applications? Because the whole notion of the SOA model is something that's calling something else and then pulling data back and then sending it off somewhere else. So it's not just a single piece of code that we're looking at here. It's the potential interaction of multiple different pieces of code, if you will, and then how do you gather that data from a monitoring perspective and correlate that as well? How do you define performance and availability? What's relevant? Is performance and availability that the DB2 or the network or the IMS or CICS or the middleware or whatever is running effectively? Or are you defining your performance and availability based around such things as what the end user is seeing from a response time perspective? These are the kind of questions you need to consider. What's the optimal monitoring infrastructure? How can you aggregate the data? How can you pull it together? What monitoring components are out there, and how does this all tie together? How do you address this challenge of what I call islands of automation? Islands of automation is something that you still quite commonly see in the industry, and basically it is that you have subject matter experts that are very good or they're given discipline, but they're not necessarily looking so much at a big picture thing, but more just tunneled into the core component that they're doing. And is the monitoring information integrating and aggregating as effectively as it could or should be? How do you want to be notified of issues? Identify, isolate problems. What are the KPIs or key performance indicators? How do you monitor and track your service level? How do you tie this all back to, again, the business application? As well then, if you have an issue, if you have an alert, how do you then in turn drill down for detailed analysis? Once you've determined what you want to monitor and what you want to alert on, how do you then in turn drill into what the underlying problem is? So quite a few questions that you need to consider. And your answer may be a little different when you're talking monitoring and managing from an SOA perspective versus maybe a more traditional mainframe-centric type of approach. The bottom line, as I implied on the prior slide, is that it may be very important to manage from a business perspective as well as a technical infrastructure perspective. So I actually draw a distinction in this presentation in terms of monitoring from a business perspective versus monitoring from technical infrastructure perspective. And the reality is, with these types of deployments, these types of application paradigms, you really probably need both of these things to get the full picture. So let's go to the next slide that says devising a monitoring strategy. What I refer to here is what I call monitor in breadth and monitor in depth. By monitor in breadth, what I'm referring to is casting a wide net, if you will, and trying to do something in terms of having what I would consider an end-to-end analytic capability, the ability to pull information from a wide variety of sources and tie it together, focusing on the key components that make up the application. The integrated approach becomes key to success because what you want to get out of is the notion I mentioned on the prior slide, which is islands of automation. Islands of automation is a silo approach wherein basically you won't really see what's going on. You're just looking at the one or two components. The end-to-end approach gives you the bigger picture, which I think is essential when we're talking about such things as monitoring and managing SOA. Another aspect of monitor at breadth is monitoring at the key touch points. And that's where you need to consider what monitoring components do you need, where do you need to monitor, and then in turn, where does that data get sent to? And you want to consider this both for performance and availability. And then another aspect of this that I'll mention as well when we're talking end-to-end is let's not forget monitoring from the perspective of the end user. Because these are loosely coupled applications that may talk in a variety of ways, how do you ultimately define what is good service as delivered to the end user? Well, you may need to actually monitor that end user response time perspective and pull that data into the overall monitoring infrastructure. And I'll talk about that with some examples later on. So monitor in breadth gives us the end-to-end. Monitor in depth gives us the drill down. Monitor and analyze the application interaction, but then also monitor and analyze the detail. When we see an issue, the ability to drill in to the specifics of a given platform or a given resource or a given subsystem, look at the CPU, look at the SQL, look at buffer pool hit ratios, look at IO, look at network bottlenecks, whatever it may be. So you need the breadth, the end-to-end, to see what's going on ultimately, but you also need the monitoring in depth to be able to drill down. So let's go to the next slide. It says devising a monitoring strategy, monitoring from a business application perspective. So we've talked about monitoring breadth, monitoring depth. The third part of the equation, and I've mentioned this before, is monitoring from the business application perspective. As I've said already, the value add of SOA revolves around the effective understanding and optimization of the business processes. The better job you can do there from a design standpoint vis-a-vis the application, the more benefit that you probably will realize from doing this SOA process. So anytime you're talking about an SOA deployment, it's important to include the business application perspective and understand that interaction to track key performance indicators for the application, to take into account changes to the application as it will over time. This is going to be a more dynamic environment. Part of the reason you go to SOA is to allow for more dynamism and more flexibility in terms of how the applications are deployed. And then in turn to monitor and correlate this information back to the app in the form of service level agreement type information or SLAs. Okay, so let's go to the next slide that says the benefits of an integrated end-to-end management approach. I talked about this some already when we talked about monitoring in breadth. The ability to see from an end-to-end perspective what's happening, how things are talking, and where the problem may be. The ultimate benefit of the end-to-end management monitoring in breadth is the ability to reduce the time it takes to resolve a problem, reduce time to problem resolution. So that's going to focus on events, alerts, and then the ability to drill down for detail analysis. And we'll show many examples of this as we go later on into the presentation. So let's go to the next slide that says pulling together an integrated management methodology. What we're talking about here, and I kind of hinted at this before, is that there is, in essence, a layered approach that this strategy plays into. And this layered approach, I kind of look at it as a three-tiered approach. At the highest level, you have your business level analysis. That's your integrated business topology analysis. What's happening from the business application perspective? What's the service levels? What are the key performance indicators? Tracking those key performance indicators, looking at things from the business application perspective. But then in turn, you can drill down to what I call the integrated technical view. The integrated technical view is, in essence, what I commonly refer to as the end-to-end technical view or the end-to-end view or whatever you wish to call it. And that's where you have integrated views of the monitoring technologies themselves and things like that. And that's where you might see, for example, your Megamon XE, your ITCAM monitors, et cetera, all tied together at that level. But then in turn, each of these monitors provide you with the ability to then drill down into the technical detail view. And that's where you would drill into your detail views of your address space activity, resource usage, information, DB2 details, and you could drill in using either again, as the examples I show here, the portal or 3270 drill down type of capabilities. So the layer approach is commonly what you're probably going to need when we're talking SOA. The business level view, integrated technical view to pull together the technical end to end, and then the technical deep dive detail. So let's go to the next slide that says IBM Tivoli Business Service Manager. TBSM, the Tivoli Business Service Manager, as we call it, is a component that is geared towards providing that business level view. That's where you can build business specific type dashboards. These are customizable. You have launch and context capabilities, both real time as well as historical information that will show the KPIs, those key performance indicators. And this approach works for distributed as well as a mainframe view of the world. It's highly scalable. And what it gives you is, in essence, like in the example I have here, we show services, we show mappings, we show events, and then you have the ability to drill down for more information from there. So TVSM is the starting point for that business level view, which I think is so important. If we go to the next slide that says business service management service details. So here we're kind of drilling down a little bit more into TBSM, and as we again see our key performance indicators over on the left side. On the right-hand side, we see the service, what we call the service dependency views. That's where you kind of see the interrelationship of what's you know, talking to what, and what is the interrelationship of the various infrastructure components. We have SLA performance tracking. All this is contextual, and then you have the ability to have your real-time events and then drill down to get down to root cause, again, using the layered approach that I showed on the prior two slides. So going to the next slide, business service management service drill down. So you have the ability, just within TBSM itself, to drill down, to get information, to look at events, to get root cause type information, to look at those key performance indicators, those KPIs, and then you can right-click to get to other views as well. So TBSM is the starting point when we're talking about looking at things from the business perspective. Now, if we go to the next slide, this is where we get down to the second layer, if you will, in the overall strategy I'm suggesting. And this is the what I call the integrated technical view. The integrated technical view, you typically would deploy around what we call the TEP or the Tivoli Enterprise Portal. The Tivoli Enterprise Portal is the user interface that comes with all the various OmegaMon monitoring components running on ZOS, so OmegaMon XE for Z, OmegaMon XE for DB2, IMS, CICS, CICS Transaction Gateway, et cetera, et cetera. All these components come with the 3270 as well as the Tivoli Enterprise Portal enablement. In addition, a wide variety of other Tivoli monitoring and management solutions integrate into the TEP. That includes the IT Composite Application Monitoring, otherwise known as ITCAM, that I show on this slide, the ITM Distributed Monitoring, as well as monitoring on the ZOS layer. So the Tivoli Enterprise Portal is ideal for the integrated technical view because each of the underlying monitors has enablement to plug and play directly into the TEP and the ability to drill down for detail. Plus, the TEP itself gives the ability to tie all these kinds of things together into nicely integrated views. So let's go to the next slide that says integrated technical view using the TEP, Tivoli Enterprise Portal. So here's an example of an integrated technical view, if you will, using the Tivoli Portal. We have information from a variety of sources. Could be ZOS, Kix, IMS, DB2. Could include some MQ, could include some distributed as well. You have the ability to highlight issues and then drill down for detail from here. So the integrated technical view based on the TEP or the portal gives you the way to tie those detailed monitoring components together and then use that TEP to do that isolation and then drill in and get information. So let's go to the next slide that says, TEP provides drill down to detail with that dynamic workspace linking. So what we're looking at here is we'll have the portal and or the IT composite application management for SOA kind of running on the high level, and then you have the ability to drill down to the detail components from there. So this is where we go from our technical view, integrated technical views, down to the detail views. So in this case, I could go from my dashboard or from IT Cam for SOA down into my response time monitoring, my Omegamon for CICS or CICS Transaction Gateway. I can go down to Omegamon XE for ZOS or DB2 detail. Same thing for network monitoring. Same thing for messaging or WebSphere or Omegamon for IMS. Each one of these then provides the ability to drill down. Now, this term I've introduced, your dynamic workspace linking, what that refers to is you have the ability to do a drill down in context so that it's an intelligent drill down where you can go down and you can go from where you need to get the most specific detail to analyze the problem. Let's look quickly at the monitoring components that feed this. So I have two or three slides that kind of list this. So we have IT Composite Application Manager for IT Cam for SOA. This provides the near real-time view of the service-to-service topology. This gives you drill down for performance detail. This gives you metrics and then drill ins for performance detail as well, looking at things from the SOA perspective. You have Omegamon XE for ZOS. This is your monitoring for the ZOS operating system, your workloads, your workload manager, your address space, the CPU storage, DASD, et cetera. You have Omegamon XE for CICS. This provides your CICS service level analysis, your transaction response time, connections, status, information, et cetera. Going to the next slide, continuing on down here, we have Omegamon XE for CICS Transaction Gateway. If you are using CICS Transaction Gateway, then this provides some additional statistics specific to KIX Transaction Gateway. Reports communication failures, resource waits, bottlenecks, et cetera. Omegamon XE for mainframe networks focuses on the mainframe network stacks, both TCP/IP as well as SNA, looks at real-time as well as historical performance information, monitors the applications and the connections into and out of the mainframe, and looks at network response time, variances of network response time, and monitors for key network problem indicators. Omegamon XE for DB2 looks at real-time thread analysis, real-time DB2 subsystem analysis, gives you thread detail, thread elapsed times, SQL information, etc. Continuing on to the next slide, again, more monitoring components. Omegamon XE for IMS, real-time monitoring for IMS, the key IMS resources, OTMA, transactions, transaction response time, message region processing, bottleneck analysis, if there's a bottleneck, where is the bottleneck? Omegamon XE for messaging, monitor your MQ series queues, messages, traffic, queue depth, look at the specific messages, manage route, handle messages, understand where the bottlenecks are within MQ series. IT Cam for response time. This is actually instrumenting at the level of the user in the sense that you can see what's happening specific to end user response time. This is the part I mentioned earlier on where you might want to consider adding this to your monitoring strategy so that you can see what the end user is experiencing from a response time perspective. Break out the network, the client, the response time data, get server information, correlate that kind of information as well. So let's go to the next slide that says IT Cam for SOA V710. Provides a view of the service-to-service topology. This is part of the IT Cam suite for SOA that basically gives you that service-to-service analytic, if you will, that shows you what's talking to what. You can get traffic counts, response time information. You can also see alerts and things. So you could have situations that have been created, and then in turn these will show up in this topology view as well as in the Tivoli, other ports of the Tivoli portal, which I'll show you an example of as well. So by looking at these type of displays, you can get down to a better understanding of how these components are interacting and then also get down to root cause analysis as well. So let's go to the next slide. ITCAM for SOA provides a view of performance metrics. So we see the topology view up in the upper left. You do a right-click, you can say Show Metrics, and then you'll get a pop-up that will show you the relevant performance metrics. And you see such things as message counts, message size, response time information, etc. Let's go to the next slide that says Use Dynamic Workspace Links to drill down to detail. So in addition to being able to see the metrics of the interactions of the various services as being monitored and measured by ITCAM for SOA, this view also provides you with the ability to drill down in context, again using this mechanism called Dynamic Workspace Links. So using Dynamic Workspace Links, like in the example I show here, we can go to performance summary information, we can go to operational information, depending upon the platform this is running on, we can maybe drill into Windows processes, or we can even, in this example, go down into ZOS-specific information as well. In this particular example here, we're just going from one piece of information, the topology view as gathered by ITCAM for SOA, and then we're drilling down into a detailed view of ITCAM for SOA performance information, where we can see service name, service type, port, response time information, etc. But if we look at the next slide, this is perhaps a better example of the dynamic workspace link process, because where we're going in this example is from the ITCAM monitoring for SOA down into the detailed view of the Omegamon XE for ZOS address space, workspace. So in this case, you know, you can do the same type of approach going from ITCAM for SOA and go down to, say, for example, ITCAM for WebSphere, J2EE, Web Resources, Omegamon XE for Messaging, various Tivoli distributed monitoring agents, and Omegamon XE for ZOS. That's what's provided out of the box, but then you can also do dynamic workspace links for other components as well using the link wizard depending upon what your monitoring and navigational and analytic requirements are. If we go to the next slide, here's another example of the dynamic workspace link where we're going from Omegamon XE for CICS Transaction Gateway to Omegamon XE for CICS Transaction Detail Analysis. So there's all sorts of lateral navigation capabilities. This is another example of one of the ones that's provided out of the box with the tool set. But again, you can customize these if required. So if you look at the next slide, that says flexibility of monitoring and navigation is supported with dynamic workspace links. This is an example of the link wizard that comes with the tool. So you can take one of the predefined out-of-the-box links, or you can go in and you can say create a new link. We're going to give that link a name. We're going to make this a dynamic link as opposed to an absolute or relative. And what that means then is that we'll drill down in context by passing key pieces of information into the target workspace that we're going to so that it's an intelligent drill down, not just kind of a hardwired drill down. The next slide that says use the link wizard to define new dynamic workspace links. This shows an example of some of the pop-ups. Now, actually, this example is a little more busy than what you typically would see because I purposely opened up several windows simultaneously here. But I just wanted to show how using the dynamic workspace link mechanism, what you can do is you can pass information as relevant to get that detailed drill down in context as required. And that's ultimately what this is about, is the ability to do that detailed drill down. Like in this example, we're actually doing a drill down from our monitoring overview, if you will, into a specific CICS region as needed by the drill down in question. So let's go to the next slide that says including end user response time. I've kind of hinted at that at this earlier in the presentation, which is when we're talking about these loosely coupled kind of environments where you have lots of different components and pieces talking in a variety of ways, one of the challenges may be how do we understand what's happening from a service perspective? What is the actual user themselves experiencing? Well, one thing you can do is by using ITCAM for response time, and there's a couple, three different flavors of this, but in general, what ITCAM for response time will provide is transaction level response time data, we'll break that data down by network time, server time, client time, correlate that by transaction, correlate that by server, so that ultimately you can see what the end user is experiencing vis-a-vis response time for the application in question. This in turn then can be integrated, as you see here, into the Tivoli portal and can be part of the overall monitoring infrastructure so that you can then correlate and see from the end user going on in through the various components of the application exactly what's going on and what is the actual end user seeing in terms of service and performance. So if you look at the bar chart in the middle of this thing on the right-hand side, you'll see bar chart examples where we see the breakouts, different colors. Yellow is client, blue is network, red is server time. And different transactions are giving us different response times on this. If we go to the next slide that says collect response time data from the server perspective, same thing. What we're doing here is we're taking the same component, the IT cam for response time, but it provides us not only transaction level information, but also some server specific information, server and IP. And then we see our average response time, et cetera. And then we can just look at it here tabularly or graph it as we do up on top. So let's go to the next slide that says the importance of network performance to SOA. It's very important, just given the nature of how applications may talk in an SOA environment, to have a good handle on network performance and availability. And so we're talking, again, in the ZOS context here. So what we're looking at in this particular example is Megamon XE for ZOS monitoring the TCP/IP, in our example here, on a given ZOS LPAR. So what we're looking at here is all the various application and connection information going into ZOS, and we can see connection response time various, bytes sent, bytes received. You can also monitor for common network performance issues, retransmissions, fragmentations, other types of issues. And then again, because this plugs and plays into the Tivoli portal, then it feeds directly into our integrated technical view using the TEP, the Tivoli Enterprise Portal. So we've talked quite a bit about the data, the information that feeds into our monitoring infrastructure. We've talked about the strategy, what I call the three-tier approach, the business level, the integrated technical level, the detailed drill-down level. We've talked about how we can drill down, how we can navigate, how we can go from our integrated views down to our detailed views. We've talked about monitoring not only specific to the technology, but also monitoring specific to the end user. Now let's look at some other things that may be of relevance. One of them is alerts. Alerting is important because that's how I can be notified if there's an issue. The whole notion of becoming proactive versus reactive from a monitoring perspective, being ahead of the game. So if there's an issue, I can be alerted to it before the user calls me on the phone. In the Megamon suite, that notion of alert is built around the concept of what's called a situation. So the slide that we're on here says, use Megamon situation alerts in the integrated technical view to highlight issues. So what we're looking at here is one of our integrated technical views with a graphic overview, and then we've detected, because we have some red indicators, that there's a problem. In this example, we're looking at a DB2 thread that's having an issue. And then you can, in turn, drill in on that particular DB2 issue to get more technical detail. So if we go to the next slide that says situation detail, drill down to see the detail to analyze the problem, we see, following kind of clockwise through this slide, what is the problem? What are the details? In other words, what was happening when the alert was originally true and what's currently wrong with the alert? Is there any expert advice? Expert advice is customizable. And so in this case, we're saying who to call, what the thread error is, what the problem may be. And then over on the continuing on the left side where we see take action, are there any predefined actions? We might want to kill this thread. We might want to notify somebody. We might want to take some other kind of action. Whatever it might be, all this can be then correlated on this single screen, which is the situation drill down. Now, a lot of this is customizable. For example, the expert advice is customizable. And oftentimes one of my recommendations is if you're going to build a situational alert to notify someone of a problem, you want to have some expert advice customized so that when they see the alert, they know what to do. An alert should result, typically, my suggestion, in some type of an action, some type of an outcome. Continuing to the next slide, situation examples. Use a Megamon XE to track problem DB2 threats. Commonly in this type of environment, that's one of the things you'll typically want to do, is track problem applications in DB2. Look for runaway threads, problem threads, threads that are running too long. Try to figure out if there's a way to determine maybe you have runaway SQL or some other kind of thing that's happening in this particular environment. So if you can have a DB2 threat alert, like in this example here, we're looking at a high get page count, we're looking at a high elapsed time, and then by having all this information on the same line, this actually constitutes AND logic. So we're doing it for a specific plan and a specific auth ID. All this together constitutes an alert that we may be using to look at a specific DB2 problem thread. Then if you look at the pop-up on the bottom left, what you see is there's other items of information we could also include into this alert as well. So let's go to the next slide that says use a Megamon XE mainframe networks to alert on DB2 distributed network issues. So here we're actually using the Megamon network monitoring tool to monitor connection activity into and out of ZOS, but here we're actually using it as well to monitor and set an alert specific to what's happening with DB2 distributed threads coming into the system. So we have our logic where we're looking at the DB2 distributed tasks. We're looking for such things as high response time variance, segments being retransmitted, a large number of datagrams being sent or received, etc. So that way then we can see, even though we're using the mainframe network monitor, what's happening from a DB2 distributed perspective. Because a lot of times the problem might not be bad SQL, the problem might be something related to network. So having an effective handle on the network is an important part of this overall approach. Let's go to the next slide that says IMS alert example. Use a Megamon XE for IMS to monitor IMS transaction response time and queuing. So in this particular example, what we're looking at is IMS transactions that are queuing up. A lot of times I might, as a strategy, if I'm monitoring IMS transactional workload, I might look at response time data, or I might not focus on that. I might be more inclined to alert when the transaction workload is queuing and backing up, because to me that might be an indication of some type of a problem somewhere flowing through the system. So I may not focus necessarily on a specific response time number, greater or less than a certain number of seconds or whatever. I might in turn actually just focus on if the workload is backing up. If it's not backing up, if we're not queuing, then so much the better. You notice in this particular example, not only can we look at a queuing number, we can also make this specific to transactions. We can also use wildcarding to do this as well. So we can say we can use this to tune out certain transactions or include other transactions or to group related transactions, etc., and look for this queuing as part of our monitoring infrastructure. Let's go to the next slide that says CICS performance example. Use situations to monitor CICS response time. So in this case, I'm using what I would call more of the traditional response time monitoring approach where we're looking at the transactional response time of the CICS trends in this case here. And this is based upon the response time analyzer, or the RTA, as it's called, group name in a Megamon CICS. And then we're setting response time thresholds based off of that. You notice that we're looking at multiple groups in this case here. If we go to the next slide, it says a Megamon XE for ZOS resource utilization alert. Now, there's a wide variety of resource alerts and things you can specify using a Megamon XE for ZOS. These could be workload manager alerts, CPU usage alerts, storage alerts, paging alerts, etc. I just picked one that I thought would be kind of interesting and relevant here, which is the monitoring of the ZIP processors. For those customers that have ZIP processors, those things can be quite useful when we're talking such things as heavy DB2 distributed workloads, etc., because it's a great way to offload a certain amount of cycles more efficiently as opposed to running some of that work on the general processors. So understanding how the zips are being utilized, if they're being utilized in the what percent, et cetera, can be useful. And if they're not being utilized because of some bottleneck somewhere else in the system or some other challenge, or maybe they're just being overcommitted in general, this is a nice way to be able to address that. One thing I show on this example as well is they consider using the persistence option to filter out outliers. A lot of times CPU alerts can be very spiky. In other words, they'll go up, they'll go down, they'll go down, they'll go up, et cetera. So rather than having an alert every time something pops out instantly, what you want to consider is using something like persistence. In this case, we're saying persistence of 3. What that means is we're not going to generate an alert on the first instance, but if it's true for 3 intervals, then we'll kick out an alert. That is an indication that we have a more consistent and constant problem. Now, there's several examples of situations of alerts. I mentioned some suggestions on typical best practices you want to do when you're creating these situation alerts. Another nice aspect about the situation alerts is not only will they appear in our integrated technical view, but you'll also see them as well in the ITCAM topology view, the ITCAM for SOA. So in this example, you'll see a situation that can pop up and show up in here, and then you can use that as well to then drill down and get more detail. So same technique, same paradigm, if you will. You can just see it from a different perspective. So let's go to the next slide that says the importance of history in SOA application monitoring. History may take several different forms. You can have very detailed history with a lot of data, a lot of specific numbers. You can also look at history from more of a trending analytic perspective. A lot of times I find in this type of an approach, the trending data can be quite useful, especially when you want to look at things from the perspective of several different components and correlate information together to see what's going on. So from a history perspective, you might want to have the history of the application availability, the ability to trend that over time, history of your key resource availability, track that over time as well. You might want a history as well of events and problems. How often have certain alerts and situations fired over a given day or a given time period? Trend your resource utilization over time, and then even maybe have some ability to do some after-the-fact analytic drill-down analysis. One component that plugs and plays well in this approach is the Tivoli Data Warehouse, which is actually just a feature of the overall Tivoli suite. So in other words, if you have any of the various Omegamon monitors, Tivoli distributed monitors, whatever, you get Tivoli Data Warehouse as part of this. It's just an option you choose to enable. What the Tivoli Data Warehouse does is it works well when we're talking about trending information from a variety of sources, being able to pull it together can work quite well. So Tivoli Data Warehouse Collection Control, which is where we're at on the next slide here, where the header says Tivoli Data Warehouse Collection Control. What we're looking at here is an example of how you can specify the collection of history data. So here we're setting up our DB2 history, and we're saying we want subsystem data, we want subsystem statistics. We're specifying how often we collect it. We're specifying if we want to warehouse it or not. If we're going to warehouse it, how often do we want to warehouse it? How often do we want to summarize it? How is it being collected? If we're pruning it, pruning meaning getting rid of old data, how often are we getting rid of it? So the Tivoli Data Warehouse becomes a very nice way to collect key metrics from a variety of monitoring sources. Works well when we're pulling together things from a large, complex, end-to-end type of thing like an SOA implementation might be. If you go to the next slide, this says use Tivoli Data Warehouse for trend analysis. You can then interactively, within the Tivoli portal, pull up the data in question, see it in a tabular format, sort it, filter it, and then also in turn then trend it like what I'm doing here. I'm taking some DB2 application scheduling statistics and then trending it over time in the form of a plot chart. Let's go to the next slide. Another aspect of this is Tivoli Common Reporting. Tivoli Common Reporter is something that's been available for a little while now. You started seeing this delivered with the ITM, IBM Tivoli Monitoring 6.2 release. And what the Tivoli Common Reporter provides is basically some out-of-the-box reporting capabilities that go after data that's in the Tivoli Data Warehouse and lets you look at that data, report on that data, manipulate and manage that data. And so each of the various monitoring components has some of these out-of-the-box reports based upon this Tivoli Common Reporting infrastructure going at data in the Tivoli Data Warehouse. I also show a link as well here that you can use to get to the Tivoli Common Reporter if you do not have a copy of that already available to you. If you go to the next slide, this shows an example of what the Tivoli Common Reporter looks like. And actually what we're looking at here is a performance report, a set of performance reports that you would get out of the history for ITCAM for SOA. And what we're looking at here is reports of service by port name, and we're getting some message count data across, looks like across an axis of time, looks like by time and day. And then if you look at the other report, what we're looking at is a count of number of requests, and it's kind of sorted out by application or service in this particular example here. So this type of data is readily accessible, easy to use. You get these are just out-of-the-box reports that I'm showing you here. So let's go to the next slide. This is our kind of our final recommendation summary slide. What we're looking at here, the header says, developing an SOA monitoring strategy, final recommendations. Well, first of all, if you don't measure it, you can't manage it. Ongoing measurement of application activity and performance is key to success. Having the right strategy, the right touch points from a monitoring perspective, and then pulling that data together is always the starting point. You want to select and publish your ongoing performance metrics. What are those key performance indicators? Track that information. Make that visible in something like Tivoli Business Service Managers, TBSM, so that you can see what's happening from a business application perspective and then trend and track and make that information available for all to see, looking at it from the business perspective. Keep in mind that many issues are anecdotal. What that means is, you know, you need to have actual measurement data to understand what's going on, to quantify when there are issues, and then track and trend that over time. And that oftentimes needs to include such things, so don't forget such things as end user response time, as well as the response time and resource utilization of the various services, processes, and the underlying technology and infrastructure. Establish a performance baseline. And by that I mean snapshot some data, have that available, measure when things are going well, so that when things are going well, you have a baseline to compare it to when things are not going well and when you're having challenges. And then finally, again, this is reinforces something I've mentioned a couple times already. Build a business application view for your key components. The value ultimately of SOA is in the ability to optimize business processes. It's not really, in a way, a technical implementation as much as it is a business optimization process. It's a style, a methodology of designing things. If you keep that in mind, that's where you can truly get your bang for the buck. And when you design and build your monitoring infrastructure, the same approach needs to apply as well. And so with that, I want to thank you very much. I'll turn it back over to the moderator, and then I'll be happy to address your questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ed. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we'll have a live Q&A session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Now for our first question, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. Or if it was low, press star 3. And we'll pause for a moment. Now for our next question, what was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. For our third question, are you currently enabled SOA or web services on the mainframe system Z? If it was yes, press star 1. If it was under planning in the next 6 to 12 months, press star 2. If it was no, press star 3. Question 4. Are you interested in managing SOA applications with an end-to-end view from the client to the mainframe components? If it was yes, press star 1. If it was no, press star 2. We hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And that concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask a question, press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at any time. At this time, I'll turn the conference back over to our speaker while we wait for questions.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to say I appreciated the opportunity to present to all you folks on the webcast today. It's always enjoyable pulling together this material and discussing these various topics. And if you have any questions, certainly feel free. I'll be more than happy to address whatever questions you have. Please don't be bashful.
Once again, that is star 1 if you have a question.
We do plan on doing other webcasts again later this year, continuing on with the series, covering all sorts of various monitoring and systems management topics. And we're going to continue doing this. We've always gotten very good interest in these things. And so, again, I have always enjoyed pulling this kind of material together. Any questions?
There are no questions. However, as a final reminder, that is star 1 if you do have a question or comment.
I guess this means I did such an excellent job explaining it. Everyone is just 100% up to speed. I don't have a question. Okay.
And Mr. Woods, there are no questions. I'll turn the conference back over to you.
Very good. Thank you very much. Again, thank you. Thank you to all who attended today's webcast. We'll be continuing on with this series as we go through the year, doing additional performance and system management topics and all sorts of variety of technologies and perspectives, a lot of it with a focus on Omegamon and the mainframe, for that's my area of expertise. And I want to thank everyone and have a lovely day. Thank you.
Thank you. That does conclude today's conference call. We thank you for your participation and have a nice day.